Thomas Long, teacher and preacher extraordinaire, relates a time when he was telling a children's story on Pentecost Sunday. He asked the three little children who were in attendance that Sunday if they knew what Pentecost Sunday was all about, and none of them did. So Tom Long proceeded to tell them, saying something like, "We remember that Pentecost Sunday when a gathered, people, sort of like this morning, were sitting together and the Holy Spirit landed on them like tongues of fire on their heads and wind rushing through the room, and they spoke the gospel in all the languages of the world all at the same time." The two little girls took this information in pretty much in stride, but the third little girl, with eyes wide open, astonished, with exclamation, "Gosh, Reverend Long, we must have been absent that Sunday." Long says the beauty of that moment was not that she misunderstood Pentecost, but that she understood the church. Pentecost is one of those days in the church calendar that we celebrate that makes us a little uneasy. We realize its importance in the empowering of the disciples for their ministry, but accounts of wind and fire and speaking in other languages make us uncomfortable. We can't rationally explain it, and much of the symbolism for this day has been so layered with certain meanings about speaking in tongues and emotionalism and Pentecostalism, and more recently in the latter part of the 20th century, the charismatic movement, and we struggle with knowing how this day makes any sense at all to a postmodern culture. But historically, Pentecost was a high holy day of Judaism. People came to Jerusalem from a wide variety of backgrounds, from many nations, and though they didn't have much in common, they were all Jews. They spoke many languages, had diverse cultures, but they came together for the party. Meanwhile, in the first century, the risen Christ has told his followers to wait in Jerusalem until he had given them his Holy Spirit. They had no idea what that meant. He told them to wait until he bestowed on them the same power that had empowered him. They can't get this spirit on their own by living right or doing good deeds or saying the right words. This group, so frightened and huddled together behind their closed doors, were people who had been jolted to their core since the death of Jesus. These people can't have a future of their own making. They've got to wait in Jerusalem until God gives them a future. And that's what happened. On that day of Pentecost, they got a future. But they also got chaos. Seems the two belong together. The Holy Spirit blows into that prayer meeting, unsettling the ordinariness of their lives. They start speaking in tongues or languages of their own country and creating such a racket that the whole neighborhood gathers around the meeting place and wonders what in the world is going on in there. All this carrying on, this laughing and shouting and singing and preaching and making such a fuss, everyone decides on the outside that surely those people in there must be really drunk. But it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. You could party all night, I guess, and be still pretty drunk in the morning at 9 o'clock. But wild thought, don't you think that the church would be accused today of being inebriated? What is it like to be drunk? It's a rhetorical question. You don't have to, answer that. I'm the pastor, so don't ask me. But from what I've observed in others, and I've been around a few people in my day that have been drunk, it's essentially to be out of control. No longer reasonable. You say things and do things that you wouldn't do or say ordinarily if you were sober, feeling totally and is totally chaotic. Now, Peter is the spokesperson now for this little group because their real spokesperson doesn't seem to be around. He tells the scoffing crowd, he declares, "Hey, we're not drunk. It's only 9 o'clock in the morning." I wonder what he would have said if it had been 9 p.m. And I wonder, is this the best explanation he can give here? But in an odd kind of way, Peter, I think, was wrong. There was at Pentecost a strange kind of drunkenness and chaos, which is maybe the church at its best. And isn't it interesting that we use this word spirits to talk about alcohol? Wine and spirits. Spirit, wild, unpredictable, out of control, able to take you places you'd rather not go or would not otherwise go. Could it just be that the church is often too sober in more ways than one? I remember my grandfather talking about the church that he grew up in. It was inappropriate to smile in church. Now, when Peter quotes from the prophet Joel, he prophesies that ordinary people like you and me, the young people without much education and the old people with very little future, will dream dreams and stand up and see visions and make stirring speeches. They will not let the despair and the disorder and the chaos of this world have the final word on what's going on. And when the Holy Spirit descends, sometimes it feels like the destruction of our well-known world, but it may just be the birth pangs of a new world, a new community where young people and old people, those who generally are not well listened to in this world, will speak up and will tell the whole wide world the advent of a new world. Now, we like to think of Pentecost as linked to Genesis 1 and then Genesis chapter 11. Linked to Genesis 1, where God speaks the world and creates order out of chaos, separating, naming, taming. And we speak of Pentecost as a reversal of the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11. You remember that story of humanity seeking to create a name for themselves, going it alone, and their language confusion causes chaos. But now at Pentecost, by the miracle of the Spirit, the chaos of language is overcome as the gathered assembly hears and understands the gospel in their own language. And what is clear is that the Spirit is on the move. The Spirit in the Greek language, the Spirit uses the feminine pronoun for the Holy Spirit. So it works to say that the Holy Spirit gives birth to a people, which becomes known as the church, the ecclesia, this new baby, us. The gathered people of God, and the Spirit moves and the church moves with it, or alongside it, or over it, or around it, or under it, or in spite of it. And there, in the first century, the church, the people declare, "What must we do?" They don't know, but they seem to get it, that this faith calls for some action. Just as a quiet waiting band of people were propelled out into the world by the Holy Spirit. So these people move out into the street and engage their world. They go new directions, serving no longer self, but serving the world, serving each other. And they now are a part of something bigger, a new community with Christ as their leader and model. The church is born. And on this day, we celebrate a birthday. So the story moves from frightened vision, disruption, and bloody endings to new beginnings, a whole new world, a new family, a new baby, the church. And it's been going on now for centuries, from Jerusalem to all Judea, from Thessalonica to Corinth to Rome, from Rome to the north throughout all of Europe into the British Isles, from Constantinople to the east, to the far reach of the Siberian Peninsula, from Cairo to the south, down through Africa, the great continent of Africa. And then even to the west, to South America and North America, and even, yes, to Pennsylvania. Next Sunday, we will celebrate World Fellowship Sunday. And we will marvel at the Spirit moving, creating, bringing people together in many languages across many cultures. The Spirit is free. She blows where she wills. And when we use the phrase free-spirited, we certainly describe the Holy Spirit. But I have to tell you the truth. We've got a mother with whom we struggle, this Holy Spirit. The church has not always moved with her. The church has often been uncomfortable with chaos and tried hard to bring order and conformity almost from the beginning. The church, or the people that are the church, have tried to define, to restrain, to organize the Spirit. And the councils of the church could not stand for the diversity of understanding, of perception, so they issued decrees and creeds to say what the Spirit is, who the Spirit is, and what the church should believe. And when the Spirit has tried to call the church outside of itself, all too often the church has tried to stifle the Spirit and its bidding with words of caution, too costly, too risky, too uncomfortable, too heretical, too liberal, too conservative, too you fill in the blank. In contrast, the story of Pentecost seems to be the point of the Spirit that thrives on chaos, and also brings about order. Not an either or. According to the thinking of theologian Alfred North Whitehead, beauty is a mixture of order and chaos with no set formula. Chaos is what Whitehead calls undifferentiated possibility. Like the waters of Genesis 1, where we read that the Spirit hovers over these waters, calling order out of chaos. We might call it the Big Bang, before things started to come together and were anything that was anything specific. Lots of possibilities, as creation proves. But at that point, nothing is defined or ordered. It's just chaos. But when chaos is undifferentiated possibility, order in its purest form doesn't admit possibility at all. and without possibility, beauty ceases to exist. Understand? Chaos is undifferentiated possibility. It's all a blur, a watery nothingness, because nothing is separate or differentiated. But on the other hand, when there is this pure order, nothing surprising ever happens. There is no freedom, no possibility. There is no life. Everything is fixed. Nothing can or will change. So the spirit is between those two poles of order and chaos. A mixture which resonates, according to the theologian, as beauty. Let me illustrate this a couple ways. When the Spirit appears to the disciples, or when Christ appears to the disciples after his resurrection, he breathes on them the Holy Spirit, and he speaks peace to them. Peace in the midst of their chaos. Their shattered lives due to the fact that their leader has been executed. Christ must know in that moment that there is too much chaos in their lives. And they need some peace and some order. And the Spirit brings that peace and order to those frightened, chaotic disciples. But then later, at this first Pentecost, the need seems to be different. This band of Christ followers need empowerment. They need a little chaos that would help them see possibilities and move them out in freedom and confidence. And they're given a little bit of chaos, quite a bit of chaos, wind and fire to fill them with energy, joy, passion, and compassion. And I wondered this week, and we should have a discussion about this. What is the need of PMC? A little more chaos or a little more order? Chaos and order held together might be beauty, but it's not often tidy. The Spirit often seems to invite us into the messiness of life. And just about the time when we think things are falling apart in our lives personally, or in our conference or our denomination, it sure seems that way now. We need to train ourselves to withhold our anxiety in the moment and be open to the possibility of the Spirit in the chaos. And messiness is often frustrating, time-consuming, often and usually makes people edgy, filled with anxiety. And the common response is to go back to what we know, what's comfortable, to more familiar places, to rush to simplistic pronouncements of what is wrong and what needs to change, who needs to be controlled, and what is acceptable, and who's in and who's out. Those conversations seem very familiar. But the message of Pentecost seems to me that we cannot control the Spirit as much as we might like to. Our mother will not be controlled. And the church at its best will seem a little drunk. And we'll get used to living with the uncertainty. We'll hold together in tension, ambiguities, embracing those on the margins, being patient in confusion when the way is unclear and uncertain. We will cultivate messy church. And I realized through my cousin, who's a United Methodist pastor in Oregon, that messy church is a phenomenon around the world, having originated in England. And messy church is about bringing multiple people together from very diverse backgrounds, young and old, and inviting them into worship, inviting them into engagement. And it's usually not pretty. It's often very messy. Thus the name Messy Church. The message of Pentecost has us feeling at times a little drunk with the Spirit, willing to risk failure for the possibilities of radical hospitality. Messy, but beautiful. Standing in compassionate justice and solidarity with those who are excluded and marginalized is messy because love is often chaotic. And if we are attuned to the Spirit, we are out there on the edges of order and chaos because that's where the wind and the fire of the Spirit blow and burn, transforming our lives, our church, and our world. If there is sin, it's settling down as if nothing has happened, to worship order, rule, and law. And the church, it seems to me, was not created to be that stable, fixed, resting place for an anxious-ridden culture, for people to flock to it because it feels good to be told what to do and what to believe. Rather, the church is called to be an explosion, a wildfire, a revolution that is a foretaste of a whole new age. The Spirit is on the move, folks. That's how we began, and that is the only way we continue as a church, to continue to keep asking ourselves, where is the Spirit moving now, and how can we move with her? What might our church be if we constantly kept ourselves open to the promptings of the Holy Spirit? Where might we be led, and how might adventure be restored in the practice of living in that tension between order and chaos? It's enough to make us drunk with the possibilities. And I wonder if at times we couldn't stand a bit more chaos. But for now, this morning, in this moment, I'm going to lead you into a little party. No, I'm not going to bring out from behind the pulpit here a bottle of Jack Daniels or tequila. Not that kind of party, but when there's a birthday, we often have a party and a cake, and this morning we have both, party and a cake. You're bringing the party, the cake's already here. Thank you, professional cake baker, Leona Landis. Now it's simply your time to come and enjoy it. To come, and two people will stand here and will offer you a napkin, and then you simply are willing or able to take one of the small little cakes and have your dessert before lunch today. And during the fellowship time, the larger one, which says Happy Birthday Church, will be cut. And then you can enjoy it with coffee. But for now, you simply are invited to come, take a cake, a little cake, take it back to your seats. Be careful so that we don't give our janitors a whole lot more work this week. So come and enjoy the cake. Taste the sweetness of the Spirit, the messiness, the wildness, the radical hospitality that makes us all just a little drunk with the possibilities and ready to be and do things we may not otherwise be and do had we been sober. Come, will you? Libby, did you have an instruction?
Oh, yes.